Hello, my name is Emma Lugo, and today we're going to be interviewing Dr. Cornel West. On January 21st, 2024, Dr. Cornel West visited Portland as part of a speaking engagement at the Old Church. His event featured Portugal the Man and KBOO's own Mike Crenshaw. Dr. Cornel West, affectionately known to many as Brother West, is the Dietrich Bonhoeffer Chair at Union Theological Seminary. Dr. West teaches on the works of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, as well as courses in philosophy, religion, African American critical thought, and a wide range of subjects, including, but by no means limited to, the classics, philosophy, politics, cultural theory, literature, and music. He has a passion to communicate a vast variety of publics in order to keep alive the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a legacy of telling the truth and bearing witness to love and justice. Dr. West is the former professor of the practice of public philosophy at Harvard University and professor emeritus at Princeton University. Cornel West graduated magna cum laude from Harvard in 3 years and obtained his MA and PhD in philosophy at Princeton. He has written 20 books and edited 13. He is best known for his classics, Race Matters and Democracy Matters, and for his memoir, Brother West, Living and Loving Out Loud. His most recent book, Black Prophetic Fire, offers an unflinching look at 19th and 20th century African American leaders and their visionary legacies. He sat down with me for a few minutes to talk about his current independent bid for President of the United States. Dr. West says he is running for truth and justice as a presidential candidate to reintroduce America to the best of itself, fighting to end poverty, mass incarceration, ending war and ecological collapse, guaranteeing housing, health care, education, and living wages for all. This is Emma Lugo. We're here today with Dr. Cornel West, who's here in Portland today because he is running for president, and he's going to be speaking today at the Old Church. Dr. West, welcome to KBOO.
Well, I'm very blessed to be here, and I salute you for being such a wonderful force for good you are.
Thank you. So, Dr. West, first of all, can you tell us why are you running for president?
Well, I think we're at a historical moment now. We need a different choice. If we choose between Trump leading us toward a second civil war, Biden leading us toward a third world war, American people, American citizens deserve so much better than that. We've got too many poor people, too many working people who are not able to live lives of dignity. We're on the edge of ecological catastrophe, escalating nuclear possibility, nuclear exchange as a possibility. There are just so many catastrophes that we're wrestling with simultaneously. And we have to have voices, we have to have movements, we have to have people in motion that are unflinchingly honest about these crises and catastrophes and provide a vision in regard to a way out.
Have you chosen a running mate yet?
No, not yet. Not
Mm-hmm.
yet. Yeah.
Are you going to be running as an independent, or are you going with any political parties?
Independent. Independent, very much so. And we've got dear sister Madeline Merritt, who's based here in Portland. She's one of our visionary and courageous members of the quartet. We've got four. We've got Brother Anthony, we've got Brother Edwin, and we've got Sister Madeline, and we've got our Sister Kiana. Those four, superb. Young, brilliant, sharp, courageous, sacrificial, service-oriented, and I'm blessed to be with them.
And are you going to be trying to get on the ballot in all 50 states?
All 50.
Is
We're
that the
shooting for
goal?
all 50. We should be on about 15 by the eyes of March itself, 15th of March. We hope to be on about 30 by the early summer, and by the end of the summer, we hope to have at least 45, 48. So it's going to be quite an interesting effort. No doubt.
Do you think that, are you running to like kind of just make a point? Are you running because you hope that you'll generate enough support to actually win? What is your strategy?
Well, it's twofold. One, you know, you run for the people to make sure that their plight, their predicament, their doings, and their sufferings are highlighted. We happen to have a very, very corrupt two-party system where the major priorities have to do with greedy bosses, organized greed, who manipulate fear and too often leads toward institutionalized hatred. And so one runs for people. And the election is, and the campaign are just vessels and vehicles to empower people, to enable people, and to cast a limelight on poor and working people's plight. You got 62% of our fellow citizens live paycheck to paycheck. Why isn't that crucial? We got $62 for every $1 when it comes to the U.S. discretionary budget. Why? Well, that's war priorities, you see. Billions and billions and billions of dollars for war. But when it comes to health care, why shouldn't we should be free? No. Comes to education, across the board, should be free. No. When it comes to housing, how do you deal with the real estate industry and its greed? When it comes to quality relations between people rather than transactional manipulative relationships, that's a spiritual dimension that I think is very important.
In 1967, Dr. King was about to begin his revolutionary Poor People's Campaign, including a march on Washington the year that he was murdered. What would you do to further Dr. King's vision if you were elected, or just simply in your role as a candidate for president? What are you going to do to help push forward Dr. King's
vision? I think your question, I deeply appreciate it, hits the nail on the head. That this campaign has much to do with the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. and Fannie Lou Hamer and Dorothy Day and a whole host of freedom fighters of the past. And King was an abolitionist when it came to poverty. One of my major priorities is the abolition of poverty, abolition of homelessness or unhousedness, and the massive redistribution of wealth downward. We've got a grotesque wealth inequality, grotesque income inequality. And there's got to be a massive investment in poor and working people. And we can do it. It's just a matter of political will. It's manageable, but is it politically possible? That's what this campaign is about.
What would you do to invest in poor people? What would you do to lift up the lives of poor people in this country?
First thing I would do is make sure it's much more easy to join a union. I support the militant wing of the trade union movement in terms of calls for at least $27 minimum wage and living wage for workers across the board. I want to eliminate the right to work state. I would want to make sure that there's a basic, universal basic income for those who are unable to work. And then with the free education and free health care and access to quality housing, that people would be able to live lives of decency without being dependent on the market.
How do you feel about minimum wage?
Oh, but I'm very much, but the problem is it's just too low. Well, I think we all now have a consensus that there ought to be a minimum wage, but I think it ought to be $27. I was part of the movement to make it 15 going back to the early years in Seattle with some very wonderful comrades up there. But at this point, I'm talking about 27 minimum.
Can you talk about the rising tide of fascism that we see manifesting itself in this country right now? What's going on?
Well, as you know, it's around the world. You know, it's around the world. And it's when people feel helpless and they look for a neo-fascist Pied Piper, in this case, Trump. They feel that they've been neglected. They feel that they've been overlooked. They feel that they've been degraded and demeaned. And they've given up on, at the moment, they've given up on a more humane alternative because the neoliberal centrist moderate alternatives have completely failed them. And they feel they have a choice only between the mean-spirited fascism and the failed neoliberalism. And this campaign is to say to those persons who are making that choice, you don't have to make a fascist choice. you can reject, call into question the mainstream, the corporate elites, the neoliberalism, and make a swerve toward humanity, a swerve toward morality, rather than a swerve toward mendacity and criminality.
The movement for racial justice saw a blossoming in 2020 with the George Floyd protests. Where is our country at right now, and what do we need to do to revive the spirit of those protests, which transformed America's conversation on race?
Yeah, it was a marvelous moment tied to that public lynching of my dear brother George Floyd Jr. But you remember that powerful song by the great Nina Simone, Backlash Blues. We saw backlash strong. We've seen this throughout American history, throughout human history. Backlash blues, when you get some symbolic or literal progress, you get this unbelievable backlash against it. And that's what we're wrestling with right now in terms of the banning of books that are trying to tell certain truths that are painful, the censorship of certain kind of dialogues and conversations that unsettle people and render them uncomfortable. But we just have to keep fighting. And the important thing is never to give up. We can't give in to fatalism and our cynicism. I see a lot of cynicism out there, a lot of it. People are just apathetic. We can't do anything. Now we got to keep fighting.
What do you think makes you qualified to serve as president?
Well, I think that you need somebody who's got backbone, somebody who fights for poor and working people, somebody who's willing to bring together some high-quality minds and citizens who think critically, but also have hearts that are rooted in empowering poor and working people. And I don't know any other candidate who is willing to do that, able to do that, and really, really yearns to do it.
Why run as an independent instead of running as a Democrat?
Oh, yeah, the Democratic Party is just so corrupt. It's beyond redemption when it comes to talking about issues of poor and working people. They're anti-democratic in their own internal structure. There's no serious primary season. There's no debates among those who are running. I mean, it's quite ironic. On the one hand, they say they want to defend democracy, and they're so deeply anti-democratic across the board. I would have no chance whatsoever.
Have you considered working or running as a Green?
Yeah, I did. I was very blessed to have Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka come in and ask me, and we worked together for a little while. I felt that also was too constraining for me. Even though they had 17 states, I didn't want to make a transition. They had access to 17 states on the ballot. I didn't want to just make it transactional, but it was still too constraining, too many internal requirements. You had internal debates. You had to go to their various gatherings from state to state. I want to go directly to the people.
What about international affairs? Can you tell me your thoughts on the current assault on the people of Gaza?
Well, I think that these are crimes. These are war crimes, crimes against humanity, crimes of genocide. I stand with South Africa and the other countries to make sure there's accountability. I do believe, in fact, the killing of an innocent person, no matter who they are, is a war crime. There's no doubt about that. They can be Iranian, they can be Ethiopian, they can be Russian, they can be Israeli or what have you. But when you reach the level of genocide, in which the genocidal intent, see, when the prime minister can invoke Amalek in the 15th chapter of Samuel, 3rd verse, which was wiping out all the children, men and women and oxen and sheep and so forth, when they invoke that over and over again, that's real intent. And then when you look and see, you know, 11,000 children killed in 2 months, that's beyond description in terms of its barbarity and bestiality. People have to be accountable.
What about the war in Ukraine?
Yeah, the war in Ukraine for me is very dangerous because it could lead toward that nuclear exchange that I was talking about earlier between Russia and the United States. And I think, again, the suffering of the Ukrainian people is something that I take very seriously, but I just don't see how that suffering can in any way be alleviated by the continuation of the war. I want ceasefire in both contexts. In the Middle East, I want ceasefire and the end of the siege and the end of the occupation. I want a ceasefire in the Ukraine. I want to be able to sit down at the diplomatic table and have some major concessions. The Russian, for example, Russian troops leave in a serious, substantive way. And at the same time, to give Russia some security so they don't feel as if the expansion of NATO really is in any way calling into question their security.
And back home in the United States, would you support a program of reparations?
Oh, absolutely. But I'm just, this campaign is committed to truth, justice, and love. Wherever the truth leads. And the truth is Janet's face. You know, it comes at us and comes to somebody else because it's bigger than all of us. But the truth about America is one in which this vicious treatment of indigenous peoples and my own descendants of Africans who were enslaved in the most barbaric ways. Let's find out what the truth is. Let's find out what kind of damages were done, and let's see what kind of repair. And that's what reparations is all about. It's about truth and justice. So there's no doubt that reparations for me is very important in terms of trying to come to terms with racial healing and with the various racial gaps that we have in our society.
Could you tell me your feelings about the current makeup of the Supreme Court and recent decisions of the court?
Yeah, well, you know, it's just sad to see it move so intensely toward the right. I mean, it's really Clarence Thomas's court at this point. And he used to be a fringe member of the court. It's now his court in many ways, more than John Roberts. And that's a challenge, even as head of the executive branch. That is a real, real challenge. And that's part of the struggle that we would have to have. That's why it's very difficult to call for the kind of fundamental transformation or even revolution that I'm calling for. And by revolution, what I mean is the sharing of power, the sharing of resources, the sharing of respect and dignity. And with our courts having this relative autonomy, they make it much more difficult.
What would you do to reform the current makeup of the court?
Well, I'd have to really kind of trot out some options, and I'd have to have long talks with some of my people on my team as to exactly how one goes about doing that. And see what the real consequences are for each option. You can expand, you can minimize some of its power. All of these are possibilities that I have to take seriously. And I haven't come down with a decision yet on that. But that's a major challenge.
Have you thought about who you would have in your cabinet if you were elected president?
No, not yet. No, I'm just blessed to get ballot access in Alaska and Oregon and other states.
So, if you're, what are some of your plans for running in the campaign this summer? Are you going to be traveling around the country, speaking at different places?
We're on the move, state by state. I was just in Birmingham for Martin Luther King Jr. We did 7 events and 6 interviews there. I'm on my way to Memphis right after this. Blessed to be in Portland, I'm telling you. And each time I think about Portland, I think of Powell's bookstore. Still open.
Yep, Powell's is still here.
Powell's is still here. I love it.
Here in Portland recently, we had 10 deaths related to cold-related exposure. We have over 1,100 people on any given night. These are city statistics. And we know it's way more than that, right, who are sleeping out on the streets on any given night. Recently, when we had like below freezing or near freezing temperatures, almost all of the day centers were closed at night if it was above 32 degrees. Homelessness is such a crisis in this country right now. What would you do to address the homeless crisis that we see not just here in the Northwest, but all over the country?
You know, we do what Finland and Norway and the other Scandinavian countries do. You make quality housing available to people. Then you make quality jobs with a living wage available to people. You make health care for mental health and physical health available to people. And we can solve the problem. It's really a solvable issue. It's just that we lack the will and we're too indifferent to the suffering of our precious, vulnerable fellow citizens.
On the issue of women's rights, I know that in the last 2 years we've just seen a huge erosion of women's rights in this country, mostly perpetuated by the current court. But this is part of a long strategy, a 40-year strategy, to undermine women's rights in this country. What would you do to turn the tide for women?
Well, one is that you just have to use the bully pulpit and say that in the most genuine and substantive way, that woman's humanity, woman's creativity, woman's genius, woman's sense of possibility is part and parcel of what it means to put poor and working people at the center. You see, for me, issues of class and race and gender and empire go hand in hand. Women are the majority of the species, so you're not talking about minorities here. You see. But patriarchy is vicious. It's been around for thousands of years, and it has to be targeted, and it has to be pushed back. So you use the bully pulpit there, and then you support the various movements on the ground, not just legislation, but the movements on the ground that are calling into question various effects and consequences of male supremacy.
Who are some of your heroes, Dr. West?
I mentioned Martin King, Fannie Lou Hamer, and Dorothy Day, and Rabbi Heschel, and Edward Said, and Audre Lorde, and James Baldwin, and Anton Chekhov. What did you say? Track of all of them, but I've been very, very fortunate to gain access to the press, and of course, Sister Amy. I mean, Amy, Democracy Now, it just doesn't get better for me. But I did my first interview with her at UC Berkeley, right off of University Avenue, and that must have been 40 years ago. So she and I go way. In fact, we graduated in the same class. You know, she graduated from Harvard.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Who's that? Mm-hmm.
Amy Goodman.
Amy Goodman.
Yes, Sister Amy. So they come at you tooth and nail. They come at you tooth and nail. You are exclusively responsible for the coming of fascism in America. That's you.
Right.
God, I've got power that I didn't realize. If I had that kind of power, there'd be no poverty, there'd be no homelessness, there'd be no workers exploited, there'd be no women violated, abused, exploited. Wow. I mean, the Democratic Party said they want to defend democracy, and they're so thoroughly anti-democratic internally, anti-democratic in their praxis, anti-democratic in their outlook. And you say, well, this level of hypocrisy becomes unbearable after a point. It's a very, I know Brother Ralph, I've had wonderful talks with Ralph. You know, I was with him in 2000. Mm-hmm. So we went around the whole country together anyway. And we've talked recently, and he's been very encouraging, but I just have a deep love and respect for him across the board. But he was very encouraging. He said we had the most progressive platform of any party he'd seen. He said, I assigned two of my folk to find some real deficiencies, and they worked hard. I said, Ralph, you got to come up with something. We're human. We're fallible. He said, I tell you, this is quite a platform. And you know, he had an interview in Washington Post. You all may have seen that.
I did not.
An interview that was about 2.5 months ago.
Yeah.
And the title was, Ralph Supports Biden.
Oh, yeah, no, I did see that.
Remember that?
Yeah.
The big controversy about that?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I talked to him, I said, people make their choices. And for example, Bernie Sanders, I still love my brother. I just think he's wrong, and I think he's more and more cowardly on this issue of ceasefire and so forth. But we've always had our differences, even when I supported him twice. But so I said, well, Ralph, I heard it. That was misleading. That was not the case at all. He said, and you know that I've always been someone promoting the progressive options and possibilities. It's just we notice major obstacles in the way, and in the way they couched it, as if somehow he had just thoroughly, uncritically caved in rather than made certain points, isolated claims here, and they highlighted X, and they do that all the time. But as you all know, momentum matters in politics. Not just because of optics, because I mean optics are important, but I'm not one to be obsessed with superficial images and so forth. When you have people organized on the ground and it spills over, it's acknowledged and recognized, and then you've got genuine momentum. So it's not just a superficial momentum. But and we're in it together. You know, this, if there's a fundamental theme here, it's the moment of such grimness and dimness that the solidarity that zeroes in on the plight of poor and working people across race and gender and sexual orientation and even national identity, because I'm very much an internationalist. You all know about my program and stuff, but I am an international. I'm concerned about working and people, working poor people everywhere.
Dr. West, it's been a real pleasure talking with you, and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This is a very, 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 very good interview, and this will be on the radio.
Yeah, this will be on KBOO.
Yes. And we just keep you here.
You have been listening to a KBOO interview with Dr. Cornel West. My name is Emma Lugo, your reporter. Thanks for listening.